Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast featuring the Crop Doctors.
Good afternoon from the Crop Doctors Podcast studio in Stoneville. Tom and I are here in Stoneville, and then we got Lauren Harvey on the phone. We introduced y'all to Lauren, I don't know, a year or two ago. Lauren is the sweet potato specialist now. Lauren, do you work out of Pontotoc? Is that your actual location? Yeah, that's what I figured. I started to say Tupelo, but then I said, no, they do all the sweet potato stuff at Pontotoc. Right there, close together.
So. I don't know how far it is as the crow flies. It's not very far.
No, it's not far.
20 miles as the crow flies.
Yeah, that'd be about right.
If that.
So anyway, good to have you, man. Lauren had made contact with us last week sometime and said, hey, I'd like to do a podcast on the, let me get this right, the guava
root knot nematode.
I said, yeah, man, that's the first time I've ever.
So for our listeners, Jason did a tremendous amount of reading up, really boned up on that nematode, and he's walks, talks, eats, sleeps, and breathes about the guava root knot nematode. He, in fact, has a T-shirt.
The first time.
None of that is true.
The first time I had heard those words strung together in that particular sequence. So, yeah, guava root knot nematode. That's what we're going to talk about today for our sweet potato growers in the state. But, Lauren, before we start, I got my question is, and I literally thought about this when I was walking in the door to the CAP Center here in Stoneville. What do you say to the guy that says yams?
Yams?
Yep, like instead of a sweet potato, a yam. Do you have strong feelings on one or the other?
Do I have strong feelings? No, I don't have strong feelings. At the end of the day, if using the term yams gets people to eat more sweet potatoes, then so be it. But that being said, sweet potatoes is definitely the proper terminology when referring to this storage root crop.
Further make my ignorance of sweet potatoes obvious. It's two different plants, right?
Yeah. So yams and sweet potatoes. Actually, I did an article with a food magazine about this not too long ago. But really, just like sweet potatoes and I guess white potatoes, the differences end essentially once you get them out of the ground, right? They're both grown into the ground, and after that, they're very, very different. Not even in the same families. There's more different about them than there are similarities.
Okay. So when you, at Thanksgiving time, when people talk about candied yams, they're really talking about sweet potatoes.
Yes. Yep. So when they, most everything that you're going to find in the United States outside of some specialty grocers is going to be sweet potatoes labeled as a yam.
Well, I'm glad that we could do our part for correcting this misinformation.
See, and we haven't had enough information about food in general on this podcast.
We haven't really.
And I think that satisfies a little bit of the food content we would need.
We are broadening out our listener base by delving off into food science.
And this might be the last episode we ever do that on. So a short, sweet, got to the point, we're just going to move right on like a rock skipping across a lake.
Guava root knot nematode. So we're just going to start from step one, and y'all can talk about what it is and where it comes from and why it's a problem, because again, the words are the extent of my knowledge on it.
I know you guys have talked about nematodes before, but for those people that might be listening where the term nematode is a new thing, essentially nematodes are microscopic worms that live in the soil. Sometimes they're beneficial, sometimes they're damaging. The guava root knot nematode just so happens to be one of the very, very, very damaging types of nematodes. Is that the easiest way to explain nematodes?
I think that's a perfect way to explain nematodes. And then there are different classes of plant parasitic nematodes, and the ones that fall within the root knot nematode class or family, for lack of a better group of terms, they're all within one genus. There are five that are important, and the guava root knot nematode is the one I think that would probably be the most recent introduction to this country, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't remember.
In 2012, I think, is when it was first detected in Florida.
Yep, that sounds right.
guava root knot nematode is considered to be the most damaging of the root knot nematodes. First found in Florida and has slowly but surely been found in other states, including South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and rumor has it, it was recently found in Tennessee. So its distribution is definitely growing, and it's a really big problem because it has a wide range of hosts and, I guess, susceptible hosts, including cotton, soybeans, and what I focus on, sweet potatoes. So it definitely poses a pretty substantial threat to a lot of different crops.
Well, and I think the biggest issue in some of those crops you mentioned, and I know more specifically in something like cotton, the guava root knot nematode has the ability to overcome root knot nematode resistance within cotton.
So absolutely.
If the particular cotton cultivar or variety has been marketed as having root knot resistance, and you find galls of a root knot associated nematode on the root, it is possible that that is the guava root knot nematode because it can overcome those resistance genes within the plant. Hence the fact that it's so important.
Yep. And the same thing applies with sweet potatoes. It overcomes anything that was previously root knot nematode resistance. And so if you do find it in something that was resistant, same thing applies. It's fairly likely that you have guava root knot nematode on your hands.
I have a laundry list of questions. We'll unpack these.
I'm impressed.
All right, so introduced about 2012 in Florida. Do we know how or where it came from most recently?
I don't know about the rumored findings in Tennessee, but I do know that previously it has been transmitted from at least South Carolina to North Carolina, the sweet potatoes. And that makes sense because sweet potatoes is a root crop and it's a soil-borne issue. There's not many crops that you're harvesting from the soil and, you know, transporting across state lines. Yeah, the severe cases are very obvious in sweet potatoes. And since you consume the root, it's the one that's found more frequently, I suppose, than something like cotton or soybeans, since you're not eating those roots.
Well, and the issue there is the marketability is reduced then in those particular sweet potato plants that would be infested with that particular nematode. I mean, let's face it, people don't want to buy ugly things at the grocery store. That's why we spray vegetables with fungicides and insecticides, because nobody wants to buy something that's ugly.
Yeah, absolutely. So in addition to the reduced yield, there is that reduced marketability component as well.
So what's it look like? Somebody pulls a sweet potato plant out of the ground, they look at it, how would they be justified in assuming that that's what they're looking at by looking at the actual root of the sweet potato plant?
So this is where it gets tricky because, so there is galling on the plant roots, but the guava root knot nematode, I think, has got more severe galling. And on the actual storage roots, it looks like warty-like masses that form. In terms of determining whether it's a southern root knot nematode or the guava root knot nematode, that is traditionally done by looking at them under a microscope. And I'm told that you have to be top of your game, A-class nematologist to be able to tell the difference even then.
If anybody really wants to dive off into that, I think I have enough experience and exposure to how they do that. They actually have to cut the butt off the female to look at the rings around the anus. And I know that now Jason has completely pulled back from the microphone. His hands are in the air. This is good color commentary about that. He is, in fact, laughing. There is a tremendous amount of truth to that. You can look it up. It's fact. That's how you actually identify and tell the difference between root knot nematodes. You look.
I want you to describe the procedure for how you cut the butt off a microscopic worm.
You very carefully have to do that while you're looking through the objectives on the microscope. So you have to have a steady hand, extremely steady hand. Because not only do you have to cut the butt off the nematode, you have to flatten it on a microscope slide so that you can actually see what are more referred to as annulations around the anus. They're referred to as perineal patterns.
Well, let me tell you who you will not find ever participating in that particular procedure.
The host to my left, that would be one Dr. Jason Bond.
See, you do these podcasts and you think you know what's coming, but you don't. And nope. I've said that just in the past couple of weeks, but man, did not see that coming, Tom.
I have yet to meet a nematologist that has proclaimed that they are an expert at telling the difference between the two of them.
No, nobody is. I mean, none of the folks that I know that are the real hardcore nematologists that I would consider nematologists, they'd all look at you and go, I don't think I'd be really good at doing that. It's not easy.
I can't imagine that it's easy. Dissecting something under a microscope.
Dissecting something that's microscopic under a microscope. So you have to remember, any small movement is actually very large in a microscopic field.
Back on the agronomics part of this, where I could actually contribute to the conversation a little bit. Lauren, beyond the marketability and the associated yield loss just from a pest infestation, what are the problems just with root knot nematodes in general, beyond the specific, one species or another?
I guess one of the biggest issues, and this goes with nematodes in general, is it's really hard to identify and detect them. It's not a consistent problem throughout your fields. They tend to be very spotty. You have hot spots here and there. So being able to identify, where at in your operation they're the biggest problem is very difficult.
And therein lies, I think, one of the more important things to talk about. Then what's the most important thing for farmers to consider when attempting to determine if they have a nematode problem?
I think taking preventative measures is the number one consideration. Whether it's soil sampling, general sanitary practices, monitoring crops for symptoms, inspecting your roots, using certified clean seed. I mean, all of those are preventative measures that a grower needs to be considering when evaluating the potential threat of nematode issues.
Yeah, if you can start clean and not actually bring that problem onto your farm and something like rootstock, that then reduces the likelihood of that being a yield reducer. And that in and of itself is important. But if you go beyond that, what's one good additional step to take to A, make sure that you're not perpetuating that issue, and then B, determine which nematode you have potentially within that field system?
Which would definitely be soil sampling.
Tom, you've talked about soil sampling for nematodes on here before, but I guess to either one of you, frequency, time of year, that type of thing, to accurately determine whether you have a nematode problem in your sweet potato field.
Well, and I would presume that sampling in sweet potato fields would be similar to the other row crop fields. You're better off taking a soil sample at the end of the season just because that's when you would expect your nematode numbers to be the highest. Spring nematode samples they're good, but a lot of those nematodes, and especially something like the root knot nematode, is pretty fragile. So if it has gotten cool or pretty cold during the winter months, those nematodes tend to die out. Now, that doesn't mean they've taken all the way back to zero. And knowing what's there in the springtime would definitely be worth, an ounce of prevention to at least determine what might be a foreseeable problem later in the season. But that end of season sample is definitely the best, I think.
I would agree. A fall sampling is going to be your best bet in terms of identifying realistic, accurate populations.
Well, and it gives you a good starting point then as well for the next season, depending upon what crop you're putting back in that field.
I know that a lot of people send samples to the Plant Diagnostics Lab, to Clarissa Babalian on campus. They definitely have got a very difficult job of identifying and counting all of those nematodes. But there are some cool new detection techniques and methods that are working on being developed right now too. That fall sampling combined with some of these, I'm going to call them higher throughput detection methods, offers, I think, some very fast and accurate ways to identify your nematode populations, especially in sweet potatoes.
Could you elaborate on one of those, Lauren?
So I recently went to the USDA vegetable lab in Charleston, South Carolina, and met with Dr. Will Rutter, who's a nematologist with the USDA. He has actually very recently developed a new molecular method to detect guava root knot nematodes in sweet potatoes. Previously, you can, I mean, I guess what is normally done is you look at the soil and it's very difficult, as we've already established, to tell the difference between southern and guava, but they have developed some qPCR tools to be able to differentiate guava root knot nematode from southern root knot nematode in sweet potatoes.
Well, and for our listeners who don't know anything about that, those are pretty hard and fast molecular techniques that not only would allow you to distinguish the difference between those two species, I would then think they'd be able to quantify nematode numbers within that actual genetic composition of the soil. And then when they actually run the what's considered the quote unquote gel electrophoresis, which in the case of real-time PCR is not gel electrophoresis.
Yeah. You definitely are able to quantify, to an extent, quantify it by how rapidly amplification occurs during qPCR. But the new methods that Dr. Rutter is working on at the USDA actually uses the skin of the sweet potatoes. So you don't have to worry about taking soil samples. You can just take sweet potatoes that have suspect galls or warts on them, and you can skin them, and you're able to utilize those same qPCR tools to determine whether it's guava or southern.
I know in our other row crops, there are some treatments, at least for suppression of nematodes, Tom. Do any of those treatments apply in sweet potato?
I'd have to let Lauren answer that one for sure. He definitely would know more about some of those than I would.
So chemical control options are available. They're there, but I don't know that I would call it a one-size-fit-all. They're temporary solutions only in terms of their long-term effects and overall effectiveness. So as far as Mississippi is concerned, prevention and avoiding bringing the issue here altogether is definitely the first line of defense. And I know I didn't really answer your question, but I mean, that is really the best answer for it as far as the guava root knot nematode is concerned.
Well, because if I'm not mistaken, something like telone is also labeled for sweet potato production. The problem there
Correct.
Being it's not exactly easy to get a hold of that particular chemical. And then, forgive me if I'm wrong, but KPAM and VAPAM probably used to be labeled for that. I'm not sure if they're still labeled, but I think you'd probably have trouble finding somebody to actually put those out because they're fumigants. And there's a decreasing number of folks that are willing to deal with the actual application of those products.
Yep. And when you couple that with the efficiency of control with those products, it makes it for not as useful of a tool as we would like to think it is when controlling the nematodes.
We've spent a good deal of time talking about the nematodes that are specific issues in sweet potatoes. If somebody thinks they have a nematode problem, what's the best way for them to go about collecting or submitting a sample, and who should they contact, Lauren?
As I mentioned earlier, we work really closely with the Plant Diseases and Nematode Diagnostic Services that's housed on campus. They are a regulatory plant pathology lab that does nematode detection, plant disease detection for a wide variety of crops. And so we actually currently have a specialty crop block grant right now that provided funding for training and acquiring the tools needed for molecular detection of the guava root knot nematode, as well as providing free nematode samples for Mississippi sweet potato growers. So anybody that is interested in getting their soils tested for nematodes can follow the previously outlined submission methods on the Plant Diagnostics Lab website, and they can submit them and get them tested for free from now through December of 2024.
And how will those be reported?
The results of those samplings will be reported anonymously by the Plant Diagnostics Lab.
Okay. And then just based on genus of the particular nematode that they come across, isn't that right?
Yes. So you will find out genus of the nematodes.
Lauren, we really appreciate you coming on and at least letting us know that this was a project you were working on. So we thank you. That's important.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate the your guys' willingness to feature sweet potatoes every once in a while.
No, man, we could do that anytime there's a topic you want to talk about. You just holler at us.
All right, good deal. Well, I appreciate it.
All right, man. Have a good afternoon, Lauren.
Thanks, Lauren.
You too.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is a production of Mississippi State University Extension.